This is Radio Superior 1959, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Turn around, baby. Let's go once more.
Hello, baby. It's your old funny daddy buddy on a bearskin rug. Tim Michaels here to rock your world and shake your tree. It's a Radioactive Monday, November 2nd, 1959. Danny Anderson has the 6 o'clock news. Bertie the farm agent will be in, and we'll start our own radio quiz show scandal.
No, we won't, Tim.
Oh, come on. It'll be fun.
No, it won't, Tim.
I get to be contestant number one, the suave intellectual engineer who will get tons of fan mail and not be able to go anywhere without being mobbed by mobs.
And I get to be the blithe, witty, but sweaty contestant number two, who won't be around long enough to get tons of fan mail and be mobbed by mobs.
I don't mean to be the wet rag, as you call it, but even playing around, we could get called before some congressional committee. You know, I have my reputation to think about.
But you're friends with Tim Michaels. You didn't think about your reputation when you started associating with Timmy.
I'll be able to patch things up with the school principals, police, chiefs, nuns, dog catchers.
I made dog catchers angry. Hey, how did dog catchers get paid?
Ooh, I got that one. I've got it by the pound.
Pretty good.
We ag agents get around, especially with livestock and domesticated animal jokes. That's a favorite of the dogs.
Hey, I got one, Bertie. Why does the dog wave his tail?
Ooh, that's a stumper, all right. A real brain teaser.
I'd like to begin my news
now. I'm going to have to cry uncle on that one.
Why does a dog wave its tail? Because no one else will.
Introduce me. Introduce me. Introduce me, Tim.
All right. For 21 points and the whole game, the 6 o'clock news slides our way from the co-op supermarket with 10 potatoes for 49 cents and flying chickens.
That'd be frying chickens.
Chickens don't fly.
Ooh, now that's where we differ, Denny. They do fly short distances, and they nest in trees. And believe you me, they don't climb those trees to get up there. Now, if you're referring to chickens being raised for human consumption, that's a different tale. You see...
Tim.
The co-op supermarket at 29th and Tower in Superior and 6th Avenue East and Central Entrance in Duluth. Now take it away, D.A.
Van Doren tells all to congressional committee, use script on TV quiz, and Drew Pearson says, Americans duped. We begin our world report from Washington.
This is Jack Bell in Washington. Charles Van Doren, his boyish face drawn and his eyes bloodshot, confessed today he followed script in giving apparently impromptu answers which made him a TV quiz show celebrity. Quoting Van Doren, I was deeply involved in a deception. He also confessed he gave false testimony to a New York grand jury investigating the quiz shows. The intellectual scion of a noted literary family admitted he had given the wrong answers in denying previously the show on which he won $129,000 was rigged in his favor. Van Doren's appearance before the House subcommittee conducting its own quiz into TV question and answer programs was as dramatic as his weekly displays of mental wizardry on the since-abolished 21 show. The hearing room was packed as Van Doren entered from a side door to evade reporters. Only those who could squeeze into the chamber were able to see Van Doren relate the details of a personal ordeal in which he wrestled with his conscience and finally bowed to a producer's urging that he rehearsed the baffling questions and answers which made him famous. Before reading a statement prepared in advance, Van Doren asked for a glass of water. Then he told all. He followed a script, admitted the young professor who became the best known of all the big money winners in the heyday of quiz shows. He was coached on mannerisms. He was cautioned against spilling out the answers. He hesitated and grimaced before the cameras to build suspense. Van Doren says he is now aggrieved that he gave in to the persuasive arguments of show producer Albert Friedman. Friedman said, after all, it was only entertainment for the millions of TV viewers. Quoting Van Doren, I've learned a lot about good and evil, and I learned that things are not always the way they appear to be, unquote. Van Doren testified that in late January 1957, while he was still on 21, Friedman demanded $5,000 of his potential winnings. Van Doren hurriedly added he didn't think Freeman meant it. Nothing came of it, he says. The incident occurred when Friedman approached him one night and, quote, told me I was the first contestant to win more than $100,000. Tears welled noticeably in Van Doren's eyes as he related the incident. In Washington, this is Jack Bell.
This is Jacob Lewin on Capitol Hill. Charles Van Doren kept his emotions in check as he read his statement, but he read rapidly, and it was obvious that he was undergoing turmoil. Reporting his reactions after receiving the subcommittee's invitation to testify last month, he said, "I knew I could not lie anymore." He said he became aware he'd been running away from himself, but he couldn't bring himself to face the situation. Van Doren says he would give anything to reverse the course of his life since his Big Money Quiz performance 3 years ago. Van Doren named producer Albert Friedman as the man who persuaded him to cooperate in rigging the show and then coaching him. A telling argument Friedman used was that as the scion of a famous literary family and a faculty member of Columbia University, Van Doren would, quote, increase public respect for the intellectual life, for the teaching profession, by making a good showing. He says Friedman told him coaching contestants was routine. Quoting Van Doren, "Perhaps I wanted to believe it. Foolishly and wrongly, I persuaded myself it was all true," end quote. Van Doren says he stood by on the 21 program for several weeks without actually appearing. Finally, Friedman summoned him to his apartment and took him into a bedroom. The producer told him that Herbert Stempel, then the champion on 21, was unbeatable, but was not an attractive contestant. He asked Van Doren to agree to an arrangement under which he would tie Stempel and add to the suspense. Stempel was a major witness earlier before the subcommittee and the New York grand jury. He testified he was given answers and thoroughly coached for his 21 appearances. In Washington, this is Jacob Lewin.
This is Lyle C. Wilson in Washington. Federal mediators met separately with both sides in the 111-day-old steel strike today with no indication a settlement was near. Federal conciliator Joseph Finnegan set further but separate meetings for management and the United Steelworkers Union. Finnegan showed no optimism. Steelworkers President David McDonald had only a glum appraisal of settlement prospects. Chief industry negotiator R. Conrad Cooper told newsmen, quote, "It is now apparent that the union is determined to force a Kaiser High settlement on the steel industry and the nation. They are interested only in perpetuating inflation in America and wasteful practices in the steel industry," end quote. Before going into session with the mediators, McDonald complained to newsmen that many of the top steel company officials were absent, declaring, quote, "I don't think a summit conference could be held if the president and the premiers were not present. Nothing can happen if they sulk in their homes and their offices," end quote. Federal mediators moved back into the strike picture, shifting the deadlock talks from Pittsburgh to Washington a day before the Supreme Court is to hear arguments in the government suit to halt the strike with an 80-day Taft-Hartley Act injunction. McDonald protested the absence of U.S. Steel Chairman Roger Blau, Republic Steel Chairman Charles White, and Bethlehem Steel President A.B. Homer. In D.C., this is Lyle C. Wilson, United Press International.
This is Stan Turner in Moscow. A color film of Premier Nikita Khrushchev's U.S. tour is drawing packed houses in a number of Moscow theaters. The film emphasizes the points Khrushchev stressed in talks with U.S. political, business, and labor leaders. The hour-long chronicle shows the New York skyline, a few modern skyscrapers, and broad highways. There are air views of Colorado peaks and parts of the Grand Canyon, but it omits modern apartments, private homes, schools, and hospitals. One diplomat commented that the film is skillfully edited to show San Francisco Harbor and Alcatraz Prison, but leaving out the magnificence of the Oakland and Golden Gate Bridges. Policemen standing in groups are shown, and the commentator suggests they were assigned to prevent Khrushchev from coming into contact with the American people. A number of warm comments were heard in one audience seeing the film, including remarks of delight that the Negroes filmed among U.S. spectators are so well dressed. In Moscow, this is Stan Turner.
KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Michaels has this message from the Co-op Supermarket.
Great values going on at Co-op Supermarket in both Superior and Duluth. At the Superior store, 29th and Tower, they've got a manager's special. Prices effective Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Elliott's semi-boneless pork butt roast, 39 cents a pound. Pork steaks, 49 cents a pound. And how about this? Co-op GI Alberta peaches, four 29-ounce cans, 99 cents. Or fruit cocktail, five 16-ounce cans, 99 cents. And in the Duluth store at 6th Avenue East and Central Entrance, Bisquick 8-ounce package, 10 cents. Co-op Fancy and Rich Flour, bleached or unbleached, 25-pound bag, $1.69. Strawberries, five 10-ounce packages, $1. And potatoes, 10 pounds for 49 cents. And Wednesday only, Swift's Polar Sausage, 2-pound bag, 79 cents. Remember, that's the Co-op Supermarket at 29th and Tower and on Central Entrance in Duluth. Now, Denny, it's back to you.
A dispute over new taxes may bring an impasse in the Wisconsin legislative session starting tomorrow, dragging it into the 1960 election year. John Powell reports from Madison.
Governor Gaylord Nelson's proposal to balance the budget with a withholding plan on higher income taxes has already brought Republican protests. The biennial deficit to be made up with new taxes stands at $22.8 million. Republicans insist any new taxes should be based on findings of the state's Blue Ribbon Committee, which has said it won't have a report until sometime next year. A tax debate continuing into next year could have serious political implications for Nelson, who is expected to seek a second two-year term. He's the state's first Democratic governor in 25 years. Other important proposals would set a $2 admission fee for state park visitors, repeal the 15-cent-a-pound tax on oleomargarine, and regulate billboards on the 11,000-mile state trunk highway system. In Madison, I'm John Powell.
And finally, Robert Connolly has been named chairman of the annual stag party of the Northern Wisconsin Retail Food Dealers Association, which will be held at 8 p.m. Wednesday in the Eagles Club Room. The president of the Wisconsin Association, Walter Copland of Altoona, is expected to attend along with an estimated 500 grocers and their guests from throughout the upstate area. And that's the 6 o'clock news. Good night, everybody, and be kind.
That's my alert. Fathers, hide your daughters Wednesday night. A grocer's stag party will darken the streets of Superior.
I hear food fights break out all the time at those shindigs.
Only top-grade meats and vegetables thrown. The magic weather ball for this Monday, November 2nd, 1959, says water will fall magically from the sky, then it could change into something they call snow. Low tonight, 28, and a frosty 36 for tomorrow, packed with a northeaster off the Big Pond at 20 to 30 miles per hour. That'll even mess the hair of flat tops, but not the greasers. A hurricane couldn't move a strand on their Brill Cream heads. Let's cruise with a crest and 16 candles on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Happy birthday, happy birthday, baby. Oh, I love you so. 16 candles make a lovely light, but not as bright. Tonight.
The 1958 doo-wop song to the crest and 16 candles. I love the guy who groans through that hot wax. Oh.
Great cruising tune, hey, Bertie?
Oh, it is by Jiminy Joe. I hear it all the time at Mars Drive-In.
You go to Mars Drive-In? Frosted Bob's Drive-In has great fries.
A&W in West End Duluth. Best burgers and beer anywhere.
Beer?
I believe that would be of the root kind, Denny.
I can't believe Joe and Bertie Cruz. I mean, Cal, of course, but you two, that's the end of cool as we know it.
I already had tons of white T-shirts. Mother uses bleach.
And white socks. I've got lots of those, too.
Mother says colored socks are bad for my feet. The dye could get into my pores and my feet sweat.
You guys are radio show killers. Hey, $5 delivers any TV in the store at Gately's. The new 1960 Philco Predicta console at Space Age TV has a screen with a full circle swivel. Only $199.95, just $2 a week at Gately's, 1319 Tower Avenue in Superior. The Ag Agent is in next.
Oh, that's Ag Agent. A-G-G, not E-G-G. But that's hilarious, Timmy.
Yeah, whatever. Let's rock with the Lloyd Price sound of Stagger Lee on the Men Who Gamble Late Dance Party.
The night was clear, and the moon was yellow, and the leaves came tumbling down. I was standing on the corner when I heard my bulldog bark. He was barking at the two men who were gambling in the dark. It was Stagger Lee and Billy, two men who gamble late. Stagger Lee threw seven, Billy swore that he threw eight. Stagger Lee.
Lloyd Price and Stagger Lee on Kickin' KUWS. You know, when Lloyd Price was on Bandstand, Dick Clark made him do a clean version. No gambling, no killing, no fun, man. We only play the blast version of the Big T Show.
I heard that version. The lyrics are out to lunch.
Denny watches Bandstand?
It isn't just an after-school fave. It helps me write the news.
Fave?
Now, Douglas County Agriculture Agent Claude Bertie Ebeling with today's Farm Report.
I'm branching out. I also tackle the fascinating, I mean fascinating, but huge universe of wildlife, Denny. So, today we're going to talk about how deer grow their antlers.
We? How many are you?
Well, that would be we as in the royal we, meaning me, but it sounds classier. Those Brits are quite classy.
I don't mean to get cheeky, but that's bloody well right.
Oh, no, cheekiness taken. And we ag agents are used to blood.
I'd really like to get down to brass tacks about antlers.
Ooh, swell. That's what we're here for, and this is fascinating. Okay, when a deer is busily browsing at the edge of a wood in spring, he is trying to eat enough food not only to give him strength and energy, but to give him a new set of antlers. Every year, he must produce new antlers to replace last year's growth. It is usually during this time of year, we're talking about November, December, or even January, that every deer, as well as our other antleries, elk and moose, sheds his antlers. And of course, this is usually a boy or buck thing. Girl deers, or does, do not have antlers as a rule.
You're pretty new at this nature thing.
Livestock and domesticated animals are our first love and area of expertise, but it's important to branch out. It keeps us sharp. Hogs and cattle and sheep can get us stuck in a rut. Speaking of rut, that's when bucks display their impressive racks as a way to impress the fair deer sex in the fall. But after that, the antlers gradually die during the fall and early winter. The process of dyeing antlers begins at the tips. It proceeds downward and inward. Finally, the whole magnificent rack falls upon the earth. This happens wherever the deer may be it fields, forests, swamps, lakes, or even in sheds. Get it? Shed? Antlers? Okay, we'll work on our nature humor.
Thanks.
Ooh, you're welcome. Many antlers are found in the spring, while others simply crumble away. Many have been eaten by your porcupines, squirrels, and field mice, who are nourished by the salt content found within the horns. That's what we naturalists call the circle of life. And look closely, although not too closely, because bucks get ornery and self-conscious, at the open spot on the deer's head from which the antlers have fallen. You'll see new growth. Now prepare yourself. This is graphic. Even so, kids should hear this because it is part of the natural way of things, but moms, it's your call. We'll wait a moment in case you want to usher the younger ones out of the room.
Dead air, that's always great for a radio show.
At first, it is a rounded pad of skin and blood, which, in about 2 weeks, becomes a cute, fuzzy antler several inches high. The development of a set of antlers requires about 5 months, another wonder of nature.
That's the Farm Report with Ag Agent Bertie Ebling.
Ooh, if I may, a little plug for my favorite 4-H club. The Happy Hustlers 4-H Club made plans for a hunter's supper to be held November 14th in Spooner. They also elected Marie Nelson, secretary, Barbara Dallavine, treasurer, and Linda Haug, club reporter. And we're tingling with excitement about the radio quiz show. We love quiz shows, but can you believe Charles Van Doren cheated?
I'm crushed.
Disillusion. Just plain disillusion, Joe.
I trusted him. And Chuck Berry.
No, that's Jack Berry. Chuck does rock and roll. If he spells it B-E-R-R-Y, Jack is B-B-B-A-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R- with the second slap.
To an injury annoying use of the royal we.
Suddenly, I want to play Blueberry Hill, but I won't. I've got this Everly Brothers Twin Spin. And ooh la la, wake up little Susie. On the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Wake up, little Susie, wake up. Wake up. Tell our friends when they say, ooh la la, wake up, pretty Susie. Wake up, pretty Susie. Well, I told you, Mama, that you'd be in my tent. Well, Susie, baby, looks like we goof again. Wake up, pretty Susie. Wake up, pretty Susie. We gotta go home. Wake up, little Susie, wake up. The movie wasn't so hot. We didn't have much of a plot. We fell asleep by Goose's took directly to Shitty Shot. Wake up, little Susie, wake up, little Susie. Well, what are we gonna tell your mama? What are we gonna tell your pop? What are we gonna tell our friends when they say, wake up, pretty Susie. Wake up, pretty Susie. Wake up, pretty Susie.
You are in the middle of a KUWS Everly Brothers Twin Spin.
Dream. all your charms whenever I want you. All I have to do is dream, 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 dream when I feel blue in the night and I need you to hold me tight whenever I want you. All I have to do is dream. I can make you mine, taste your lips of wine anytime, night or day. Only trouble is, gee whiz, I'm dreaming my life away. I need you so that I could die. I love you so, and that is why. Streets of wine anytime, night or day. Only trouble is, gee whiz, I'm dreaming my life away. I need you so that I could die. I love you so, and that is why whenever I want you, all I have to do is dream.
On the Cadence label, Don and Phil Everly, All I Have to Do is Dream on a KUWS Brotherly Twin Spin. You know, they knocked out that in two takes with Chet Atkins strumming the old guitar, and it ended up number one in last year's 1958 Billboard Hit Parade. Cool, eh, Cal?
Love the Everly Brothers. Do I get to play the quiz show?
Natch, man. But since you sports guys are so brainy, take it easy on the rest of the crew, okay?
I can't, Tim. I can't take a dive. Then I'd be no better than Charlie Van Doren and Herbie Stemple.
Cal, you're so bad and ethical. Take a lesson, cats and kittens.
Let's face off, fans. There's no doubt about it. The New York Giants are the kingpins of the National Football League because of their defensive play. They knocked off the Green Bay Packers in New York yesterday, 20-3 before 68,000 fans. Largest ever for a Packers-Giants game. And the defense drew gobs of praise from Giants coach Jim Lee Howell and Vince Lombardi of the Packers. Quoting Coach Lombardi, "Their defense just overpowered us." He should know something about the Giants' defense, for he tutored the offensive platoon last year when the New Yorkers won the Eastern Conference crown. Giants field goal specialist Pat Summerall kicked two from the 49-yard line and added extra points after each of Alex Webster's touchdowns. Paul Hornung's 29-yard second period field goal got the Packers only points. The Packers are 3-3, while the Giants are in first place at 5-1. Jim Brown exploded, jarring Baltimore's world champion Colts out of the Western Conference lead and making Cleveland a contender again as the NFL races hit the halfway mark. The 6'2", 228-pound bulldozer mixed speed with power for five touchdowns, triggering the near-record performance with the longest gain of his pro career, a 75-yard rumble from a pitch-out that got Cleveland rolling on a 38-31 victory over the Colts at Baltimore. The Superior State College Gritters employed an explosive passing attack and another fearless defensive performance to crush the Stevens Point State College Pointers 19-0 Saturday in the windup contest for both schools. Quarterback Don Perkovich fired two touchdowns, aerials in each of the first three periods, as the Jackets clinched third place. The SSC signal caller pitched two long passes to halfback Bill Smiley for two touchdowns. The third came on a short fling to end Tom Kuklinski. And here's a strange tale, fans. Only a day late for Halloween, the mask made its appearance in the National Hockey League, and both goalie Jack Plante, who wore it, and coach Toe Blake, who once hated it, think it might be around to stay. Four-time Vezina Trophy winner Plante with the Montreal Canadiens slipped into a costume-made fiberglass face mask last night. He figured it was a good idea after his nose and lip had been badly cut by a bullet-like shot fired by Andy Bathgate of the New York Rangers. With holes cut out for his eyes and mouth, Plante played a spectacular goal, turning back 29 of 30 shots as the league-leading Canadiens scored a 3-1 victory. Montreal coach Blake called it the coming thing in the game. Jacques, turning 31, had the mask constructed after he twice suffered fractured cheekbones, each time forcing him to the sidelines for an extended stay. A hospital in Montreal made a skin-tight plaster mold of his face, then turned it over to experts to construct a mask of unbreakable fiberglass. This is Cal Sabatini, hoping all your face-offs are friendly.
Especially if you wear a mask.
It would have come in handy in my playing days.
Ah, but then you wouldn't be so ruggedly handsome, you hulking brute. Quiz show time is next, but right now, come on, let's go. Let's go with Richie Valens on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Well, come on, let's go.
Be gone, but not forgotten. Richie Valens, and come on, let's go, little darling, on Kickin' KUWS.
Now we'll open the locked piggy bank to retrieve the questions and answers for 22.
22?
21 is copywritten. Now, Bertie, if you would do the honors and unlock said piggy bank.
Ooh, you bet your life.
Ah, that's another show.
How do you unlock a piggy bank?
A specialized key called a hammer.
Now stand back. Flying shards of glass can cause injury.
Now we'll remove the questions and answers for today's quiz show, which was under 24-hour guard by Cal's dog, Fluffy.
Fluffy?
Now the sealed envelope, please.
Ooh, I'm so tingly. This is like the time Bob Kincaid opened his root cellar after an entire winter under snow.
I assume he found roots.
Did he ever?
Oh, for crying out loud, Bertie. You can't look. You and Cal are the contestants. We need an honest third party to do that.
Ah, that's the definition of a newsman. This is taking way too long.
Okay, Tim, here are the questions and answers.
You know, winning contestants get bags full of fan letters.
Who will be famous?
The key word there is winning contestant.
Okay, now everybody, put this soundproof device over your head. Get it on there. All right. This ensures that other contestants don't hear answers from fellow players. It's just like that soundproof booth they used on 21, but smaller.
Those are paper bags.
Well, we'll also have earplugs. I said we'll have earplugs.
I can hear you, but I can't see anything with this on.
We don't care for confined places. We get sweaty and claustrophobic.
Only one person allowed for each soundproof paper bag.
Yeah, mine is nice and snug. I feel safe in here.
Our first and last question for 22 points.
You're not a big believer in drama, Tim.
Getting hard to breathe.
Who said beauty is truth? Truth is beauty, Joe.
Can I take the first part last and the last part first?
There's only one part.
Getting hot and sweaty and a little paranoid.
10 seconds.
Oh, the pressure. Think, eighth grade lit. Maybe it was a tenth grade lit. That was the class with Pretty Molly Johnson, who had braces. I think she liked me.
Time's up. I must insist on your answer, Joe.
Cal and Bertie, plug your ears.
Room swimming. No concept of time or space. Dizzy.
For the whole shooting match, what's buzzing, cousin?
Oh, braces. Tenth grade. Oh, I got it. It's Keats, John Keats.
You nailed it. You're the winner of 22.
Boss job, Joe.
It was nothing, Cal. You could certainly have won that had been a question on sports, my good man.
Keats is actually one of my favorite poets. He was a major figure in the Romantic movement.
Oh, the bag is off. I feel much better.
Perhaps the self-same song that found a path through the sad heart of Ruth when sick for home, she stood in tears amid the alien corn, the same that oft-times hath.
Charmed, magic casements opening on the foam of perilous seas in fairy lands forlorn.
Forlorn, the very word is like a bell to toll me back from thee to my soul self. Adieu, the fancy cannot cheat so well.
As she is famed to do, deceiving elf, adieu, adieu, thy plaintive anthem fades past the near meadows, over the still stream, ooh, up the hillside, and now 'tis buried deep in the next valley glades.
Was it a vision or a waking dream? Fled. Is that music? Do I wake or sleep?
Ode to a Hummingbird, Keats, 1819.
So I can safely assume everyone got the question and answer ahead of time, a la 21?
Hey, I thought it was real gone, man.
Avast! Ha! It was all in fun!
And there was no prize money or anything, so it isn't graft.
A lesson here for you cats and kittens, don't cheat.
That was a lesson in how to cheat.
But with no prize money, cheating doesn't pay.
Good night, Tim.
Time to cut out, cats and kittens. We'll be back same time, same dog pound, the good Lord willing, and we don't get investigated by a congressional committee. For Danny Anderson, Cool Cal, and all the gang, this is Tim Michaels, rocking your world.
Ooh, can we keep the paper bag?
It's an improvement for you, and you, but for me.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1959, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Performances for tonight's show are by Don Hansen, John Munson, Brian Matuzak, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1959 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram and Duluth Herald. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.
And I get to be the blithe, witty, but sweaty contestant number two who won't be around long enough to get tons of fan email and be mobbed by mobs.
I don't think we had email back then.
Oh,
it's not
email?
Even on the page.
Good day. I didn't catch that.
He's hallucinating again. He thinks he's somewhere in the future.
Oh, boy. Sorry.